welcome to the Everything Is Earned podcast. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm your co-host, Tim.
And we're here to break down everything happening in your Cleveland sports world. Now, we are about week five here in the quarantine life, and we've been bringing you the best of Cleveland sports. Go ahead.
Regardless of the lack of Cleveland sports or news that's been going on lately.
Yeah, they're not playing any games outside of, you know, Madden and 2K, but...
Or
bad games of horse. And, you know, we're bringing the good highlights from the back in the day. We're having discussions about Browns uniforms till we want to just die. It's been really quite a fun time. And luckily, the uniforms are dropping today. And I'm interested because I think they're going back to the old school. What do you think the direction they're gonna go?
Well, we did see a preview from the Cleveland Browns a few days ago, and I think they had a few of the old school players. I can't remember who.
Clay Matthews was one of them.
Oh, okay. And they had showed a little bit of hints through that old school stripes and stuff, and it seemed through the. Well, we saw Bonnie the Elf is the logo on the draft hats, and someone said that if you look closely, it seems that the face mask is also going to be. It might be that little change might be that Browns brown color. So it's interesting to see if they go back to the old school. I feel like they're gonna pair that up with the Cardiac Kid stuff, with kind of coming back onto the scene. With this new Browns team.
Now, I heard if you actually zoom in on your phone, you magnify it as much as possible, you can
see... Or grab a magnifying glass.
And hold it up to your phone.
That works,
you can
too.
See 1,000 little Jim Brown emojis. And that's what makes up the new color pattern for the Browns uniforms.
And instead of, like, the MJ crying, like meme, it can be, like, Trent Richardson or something like that.
Yeah, crying, yeah. Yep. Trent Richardson crying. And then the Browns misspelling dog pound is also thrown in there in the mix. It's very tasteful, yet a bit vibrant pattern.
What if they actually did it? They just did the crying emoji in little tiny, like, pixels of all the past, like draft pick fails. Like, yeah, Johnny Manziel and Justin Dilbert, like, yeah, Danny Sheldon and Trent Richardson, all the worst of the worst in
you
there.
Just pay homage to the last 20 years of Browns football.
And that's enriched in their uniforms every time the Browns go up onto the field.
Just know that their goal that day is to be better than the uniforms they're wearing.
The stitches, oh, like they have like little stitch or like micro stitches or like cloth into like some of the old uniform of like. Some Danes we got absolutely obliterated in or something like that.
Yeah, just the highlight film, like the camera reel, like you've got the negatives for those those particular games.
Like put them in the collar, like the tag on the.
Yeah, I personally would love if they had the scoreboard from losing to that backup Duck Magoo, whatever his name was, from the Pittsburgh Steelers last year when we lost that particular game. What is his name? What is the Duck quarterback's name? The guy who was the backup for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Rudolph?
No, that's the guy that Myles Garrett hit in the head. The backup that we lost to the second
time. Oh, the backup. I don't know. It was like Duck
McCown?
It was like Mr. Duck or something like that. I don't know.
I don't know. His name was Duck, and we lost to him, and he was a third-string quarterback, and I just want the Browns to remember that forever, that they lost to a quarterback.
A third-string quarterback.
With the name Duck. Moving forward into more positive things, we're going to get these uniforms, and you know, we'll finally
be done with the whole conversation.
Thank goodness. One of the things that I think is great about the uniform release is
the costumes.
Is that they're going to do donations. They're going to donate 100% of the uniform proceeds on the Brown side to their Hats Off to the Heroes Fund, which is actually going to people in the frontline workers right now, and several other, you know, portions of that fund that the Browns have set up. So
what, the sales? So from people, the jerseys and apparel and stuff?
Yes, from the uniforms are going
during
to this
year?
Fund. Yeah, okay. are going to this fund for currently when they released today, which is great. So it's great the Browns are actually looking to do something positive with that because they've tweeted and Instagrammed enough teasers that I'm about ready to lose it. So we can all buy our Nick Chubb jerseys tomorrow because I think that's personally the one that I would buy if I was a Browns fan that wanted to buy a jersey. I'm not a huge jersey person. I've never been a jersey guy. I'm more of a t-shirt and hat guy.
If you did a t-shirt jersey, it would be Nick Chubb.
Is that, are t-shirts jerseys basically the equivalent of like a tuxedo t-shirts? Like,
I think they're better though, because I can wear my jersey t-shirt every day. I'm not going to walk around every day in a jersey.
You could be more of an adult in a t-shirt jersey.
Yeah, and they're functional adults walking around in tuxedo t-shirts.
That's true. That is true.
There's not functional adults, however, walking around in tuxedos every day, depending on your job.
But. Tuxedo shirts, you're saying? Like the ones that have like the printouts?
Yeah, the printouts.
Yeah, they're not good. I do like that they're doing that donation. I think that's great. I think if I was going to get a jersey with some numbers, I think it'd be a safe bet to go with like Jarvis Landry.
Do they still sell? Or like
an Odell Beckham.
Like Joe Thomas apparel? I would imagine they do.
Oh, yeah.
I'd buy a Joe Thomas still if they have it. I'd buy, Nick Chubb, that is safe. I'd personally buy a Baker Mayfield because I'm still very high on him. And I believe the Freddy Kitchen season was an outlier in his career, not the one that's gonna show the projection of the rest of his career. Myles Garrett too, I believe he's still a very, very safe bet. I'd be a little hesitant on Denzel Ward, but those are the three or four main guys. And Jarvis, obviously. The four or five main guys I'd pick. Anyone else, I'd be more hesitant on, because they're more fan favorites, they're more likely to be traded or just not picked up and stuff.
But if you're going to get a Chubb jersey, are they going to re-sign him? Because what we currently know right now in the NFL is you don't pay running backs, even though the Panthers just signed Christian McCaffrey for $16 million a year.
Just said, screw it, and yeah, signed Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, which is a lot of money for a running back to make. It's just a lot. I mean, you tie up a lot of money in your offense when you do that. So even though the Browns don't have to pay Nick Chubb till after the 2021 season, I think it's tough right now to go in and say, okay, I'm gonna pay him $16 million. Cause that's now the market has been set to $16 million. So if you want to keep him on your roster, you're going to have to pay him. Just for reference, NBA players that make $16 million a year, or just about that figure, Brandon Knight currently makes $15.5 million. Jonas Valanciunas on Memphis Grizzlies makes $15.5 million. Ricky Rubio makes $16.1 million. Gordy Jang also makes $16.1 million. Evan Fournier makes $17 million. Bismack Biyombo made $17 million this last year. So you're telling me that one of the top running backs, top running back,
the highest paid ever, too. Running back ever.
Yeah. Is Christian McCaffrey is making Bismack Biyombo money. Just as a comparison.
I'd be furious if I was in the NFL. And, like, especially, what was it, 2016, 2015, when they had a huge cap increase, and you have Damari Carroll making 60, and you have Tyler Johnson making, like, 56, 52. Yeah. I'd be losing my mind. When you have some of these players like that making Tom Brady money.
Serge Ibaka made $23 million this last year.
Yeah, he's making Tom Brady money. He's making
Harrison Barnes made $24 million.
Making Cam Newton, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers money.
Whoever Harrison Barnes' agent is in the NBA is a genius. That guy has bamboozled more money out of NBA teams than
he just got $80 million, right?
Yeah. Deal? He got off the Cavs championship loss. And signed like $100 million contract.
And then sign up 80 to Sacramento.
And just got another 80 with Sacramento. His agent is an absolute wizard. They're like, hey, do you want a middle of the road small forward that can sometimes score, that's not very reliable, and still doesn't have a jump shot?
Is that LeBron's guy?
I don't think it's Clutch Sports, but I just it's shocking to me that Harrison Barnes makes as much money as he does in the NBA. So to bring things back to the discussion here. Nick Chubb, I don't know if it's a safe jersey buy yet. I would wait.
It is. I disagree. It is. You bring up that running backs do not. Oh, it's not very a safe bet to pay to make your running back a paid man like this. Like paid, not talking about like pay the guy like a reasonable salary. We were talking about paying him what he deserves and what his level of play talks that Todd Gurley money, right? That Le'Veon Bell money. I think it's safe for Nick Chubb, or based on what we see. Injuries and stuff always happen. Knock on wood. But he hasn't had the injury history that some of these top tier running backs have had. Gurley has had, and he's been a very durable player. And you see it in his game, you see it in what you hear about him with his work ethic and his mentality. And I think he's one of those guys that just somehow doesn't get injured for most of his career.
Okay, if you look at the running back market though, look what Melvin Gordon just signed up for. He signed up for what, 8 to 10 million? I mean,
I think 8 million, yeah.
Yeah.
8 million, 16 mil, 2 years, yeah.
How much farther down the line is Melvin Gordon versus Nick Chubb?
But do you think that was immediately correlated because of the Todd Gurley thing? Because only a couple weeks later, then McCaffrey did his highest paid deal ever.
I think it was
a little bit like a panic for like a week or two there. I think Melvin Gordon and his agent did a poor job of kind of weathering that storm. They didn't wait to the storm. They said, oh, I don't know if it's going to drop any further. Let me get my money before it shuts off completely. And it kind of revolted back into we pay our top talent.
I just don't know you're going to get that money or make that contract worth it at any point here. Like, look at the biggest deals. Like, your Devontae Freeman deal, your Todd Gurley deal. And right now, your big deals that are next that are going to be on the watch list for are they bad deals or not are going to be Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey. Now, McCaffrey, I think, is an exception to the rule here because he's such a versatile player. But do you think Nick Chubb is that versatile type of player?
He came off that injury, too. He came out of an injury.
I don't know, man. I just think that, like, at the end of the day, you look at the books, you look at teams that won Super Bowls, did they have prominent big-time running backs? Look at the Chiefs. They just won a Super Bowl. Who the hell is a running back?
Mm.
No idea. No idea who the running back is.
Okay, but going into this Kevin Stefanski offense, we know it wouldn't be one heavy. We know we're going to have two solid bats. So we'll have to look into this more and research a little bit more and see what the available running backs will be during his free agency if we don't re-sign him. But I'd rather take, if we can come to a reasonable agreement, and it'll be a little bit towards Nick Chubb and his side and his agent's side, that I'd rather take that safe bet, re-up with him, and know I have a top back, pardon any injuries, for years to come.
Okay, one more question for you in regards to the backs that have won Super Bowls recently. If you think about the backs that are on the Super Bowl rosters.
James White.
Okay, yeah, James White, LeGarrette Blount. I think Monte Ball was on the Buccaneers when they won. I think that's what
that was a couple years ago. Or,
yeah,
Philly. They had who they have.
Philly had a tough running guy. Was it Blount at that time too? They had a big guy. Who was the Phillies? Who was Philly's running back? They had a two back set.
Didn't they have McCoy? They have Shady?
No.
That was he left to Buffalo after that. Before that, I'm not sure.
I think I have
Deion Lewis wasn't on that team anymore.
I have to find it. It's Ajayi. It was Ajayi. It was
Joseph Ajayi.
Yeah, the guy that got actually got traded in
from Detroit.
No, it was LeGarrette Blount on that roster. LeGarrette Blount was the starting running back. He had a big game that game.
So he's had a couple of Super Bowl wins here now.
Yeah,
he's just hopping on. If LeGarrette Blount is available come trade deadline, should the Browns go after him?
If he gives we'll
talk about more when it comes time. But I mean, if there's a correlation there, if it's like James Jones making the NBA the finals for six straight times, then I think we'll have to look into it. Maybe
I think he had actually had a. I remember how Ajayi had actually really a good game that game too. I think remember having some really big bruising runs.
But your point is you don't need elite running back.
Yeah, elite running backs aren't currently winning you Super Bowls.
To be in Super Bowl contention,
it's a passing league, man. You know it, the passing and playmaker league. Okay, so like you need guys that are gonna go out there and give you game breaking plays. Like that's what you got Odell for. Okay, you can love Jarvis as much as you could possibly love Jarvis, but no one on the Browns roster more than Odell is a game breaker.
Well, there's very few wide receivers in the league that are more explosive and breakout plays than Odell Beckham.
Look at how garbage last season was, right? He almost had 900 yards, and the season was a total mess, right?
He had 1,000.
And then he still had a game-winning touchdown versus the Jets early in the season.
A 90-yarder.
Yeah, and he still made like all the most ridiculous catches the Browns had.
Was it just over 1,000 yards?
It was like, no, it was like 900 yards.
968 or something.
It was right about 900 yards.
I think it was more than 900. And yeah, he had 4 touchdowns. He had a very lousy year, but he had the leg injury. Was it groin injury?
Yeah. Yep.
Or was that Jarvis? Jarvis had the hip. He had the hip. Jarvis had the groin injury. I want to say.
No, it's flipped.
Okay.
It's flipped.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
He played the last game. He didn't have to play the last game too. Odell played it last game of the year, even though he could have sat out.
Despite his antics, despite all the hate he gets, he played while injured, and he chose to put himself on the line for his team and for Cleveland. So I agree with it. You need that breakout guy. I want to see what we go with in the draft wise, adding the back half of that receiving corps.
But mostly it's quarterback, though. Would you agree that at the end of the day, in the NFL playoffs, quarterbacks win you games?
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, I think that past season was an outlier with Freddie. I think it was just a complete disaster that we cannot miss the fact how much of a coaching plays a factor with the overall collectiveness and function or dysfunction of a team.
I think the more we look back on this season, the more we'll realize that it's just kind of still so fresh that we just have a really kind of snappy, angry reaction to it because we feel like we got cheated out of a year of football.
Yeah, that sucks because we've been lacking talent for such a long time and we finally have it and we don't have the pieces in the front office to bring it all together and make it into a playoff team. So that's very obviously upsetting. And I think Cleveland fans in general are quick to do that because we've had all this losing between all the teams at some point and probably besides maybe the Indians, they've been probably the most consistent throughout this modern 21st century here. So yeah, they're always quick to jump and make these irrational, maybe not irrational, but kind of aggressive and aggravating negative statements.
I'll say this though. If you look at the season here and last season, and as frustrating as it is, I will be very happy as a Browns fan if we can just get to the day where if we lose a football game, it's not because of coaching, it's not because of lack of talent, it's just because we didn't make enough plays than our team did. I would love that to be the case. Just they made more plays than we did. It wasn't a bad matchup. We did what we could. It just came down to they made more plays than we did.
It wasn't all day, and they out-executed us.
I would love that. I would love that immensely because that would prove to me that the Browns are in the position to compete every single week, and it's just a matter of making more plays in their team. And that'd be perfect. That'd be my ideal world to live in, and I'd feel much better about a loss than if I had a loss due to incompetency or lack of talent on my roster. We're there. I think we're almost there. So.
Oh, I think it's experience and having some chemistry or building some chemistry in that foundation under a consistent staff, under consistent players. We have a franchise quarterback. You have those pieces in play, and you just need to retain them, fine tune your craft, figure out what you do well, and keep on improving every week.
It's gonna be real sticky though. If we start winning, and we're gonna get in a position where we can compete for playoff games. You're going to be in a really sticky spot in terms of who you're going to keep, who you're going to let go, and what positions you're going to put value on. So,
well, I think at the start of the season, mostly you have to figure out who your core pieces are there moving forward. And I mean, depending on any huge impactful events that happen during the season, that you can figure out what your core is and what isn't, and what's viable, what you need to retain, and what maybe Nick Chubb, if you can re-sign a guy that's sufficient and good enough to keep you in playoff contention, keep you competing, then you have to kind of weigh that as you go a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's a big question mark going into this next season. And that's one of the things you want to find out by the end of this next season is who is your core, who's going to move forward, who do you need to reevaluate, who do you need to add more depth to. So that's my kind of one of my big things I want to see in the upcoming season.
Who's a few guys, say two or three guys, that you believe are staple in your core, untouchable, surefire. They're on your, they're part of your future long term, and then who are two or three guys that are kind of in on shallow water here, and see if depending on how they play off in the season, they could be a foundational piece that just falls off the rocks and might just slip out and be one of those non crucial or necessary pieces.
Okay, I'm gonna give you my core pieces that I know are gonna be with the Browns going forward. And then I would be very shocked to see if they're not there. I'm going to give you the first one. It's really obvious. It's Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett is obviously the best defensive player you have. He obviously has been here for a little while, and he means a lot to the fan base and the franchise. They know what a game breaker he can be. And coming off of a disappointing end of the last season, I think he's going to be even hungrier this year. I like the work ethic. I like the personality. I like the person that we have in Myles Garrett. And I think that's the biggest reason why he's my obvious choice for the first core piece that we have to retain.
Well, he's your best player on your team. You can say that without a doubt.
I don't know.
Still wise, talent wise, regardless of say, oh, skill position, whatever. He's your best player. He's Maybe. Shown that throughout the since being drafted that he's your best player.
Maybe
with the up and down with Odell, Baker Mayfield, you can say is more important. But I'm saying you wipe away the skill position and just put sheer talent and value, still and talent still, it's Myles Garrett. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously your obvious choice. What's number two?
Number two, I have to put Denzel Ward probably as my number two. I think he's your best corner. Obviously, I think he's a standout player when he's able to stay on the field and be healthy. I think that last year was a nice step in the right direction in terms of his staying healthy. I think that when you get him paired up with another corner that's gonna be viable, it's gonna be a very dangerous secondary. So I think he's the guy I want to see, you know, go long term with the Browns. I think he can be an absolute X factor on the defense. When it comes down to it, you need a corner that's gonna shut down the next, you know, the best receiver and really limit their effectiveness. Denzel Ward's that dude.
Untouchable. So I'm not to disagree with that, but finish your third.
My third guy is, as things currently stand, I'm going to go to the offensive side of the ball. I'm going to say Jarvis Landry. He is going to stay in Cleveland because here's why. Jarvis, he's not only his contract's here, he's not going to, you don't have to worry about resigning him. He's going to be here. He's also the pairing that with Odell now. He's forever paired with Odell as far as Cleveland goes. If you get rid of one of those two, you're going to get rid of both of them. You can't lose one without losing the other. So Jarvis is the level-headed one. He's the guy that keeps Odell grounded.
He's a calm within the storm.
Yeah, and so he's the guy that he's the, my third core piece that I think that was not going to go anywhere. So those are my three guys who I think are going to be in this roster going forward and are definitely core pieces to your, you know, your future.
I'll go with my three core pieces, and then we'll move on to your kind of rocky players who may or may not be long term depending on
the bubble guys.
So first, I'm gonna agree with you. I'm gonna do the same thing with you. Did Myles Garrett? I said he's the best player on the team, in my opinion, hands down. I think that moment, we all know the moment, was an outlier for him as a not only a player or from his mentality, but also as a person. And I think you mentioned his hunger coming into the season. I think not only that, but it's going to be making it up to the fans. I think he's going to be trying to make it up to the fans this year and prove what he thought he was going to have last year, a defensive player of the year kind of season. Moving on to number two, I believe the second most untouchable guy is, I'm going to say Baker Mayfield. I think...
Okay.
I think, unlike you think, what do you believe that Case Keenum could take over at any moment? I think that Baker Mayfield is going to be so locked in with a coach that actually is going to play to his personnel, to play to his offensive personnel, use Dwayne Dame to take pressure off of him and have that as your number one, option, and have that set up the passing game. I think that's gonna benefit Baker a lot and kind of play back into his role and back into being comfortable. And he's a franchise guy. I don't think last year was so crazy and well, not to Browns fans, but such a I don't even know how to describe it, a unorthodox season that I don't think we can take much from that, from the point of Baker Mayfield and his future and where he's at in his head and his talent. So I think number two, untouchable, Baker Mayfield. Number three, I'll have to say Joel Bitonio. I want to say Jarvis too. If I had four, I'd say Jarvis too. But Joel Bitonio has been the rock on the offensive line. No matter, it could have been absolutely horrendous. It was pretty bad last year, but if we didn't have Joel Bitonio, that veteran, I think he's basically, I don't think he was a captain, but he basically should have been, because he's a pro bowler. I think he was last year. And I think he's more of a teacher. It helps out those the rest of the line than we think we do. And he's going to be that core piece on offensive line that we built around, or we tried to build around so far. So those are my three.
You got Garrett, Baker, and Bitonio.
Yes, okay. and you have Miles Garrett, Jarvis Landry, and your third guy is Denzel Ward.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely, yeah. So, going into my bubble guys, I'm a big three bubble guys. Guys that could be a piece of your core, but have to show up this year, have to prove it. I'm gonna go with a pick, a draft pick that we had last year, Greedy Williams. Greedy Williams is a guy that I believe possesses the talent to be a top level cornerback, but he needs to work on technique. He needs to get more time on the field, and he definitely needs to get coached up much more than he did last year. I think he lacked the confidence that is required to play that position after he had some initial rough goes at a couple games.
I think he's having the same difficulties and tough time that another young guy, another rookie in Cleveland has had this season, or this 2019 season, is Darius Garland. I think both of them have some growing up to do. I think they need to figure out how to play in a man's league. And I think they'll get there. I think if they have the right leadership and mentorship that they can get there. It's just, I agree with you that I think they need to grow up a little bit. I think in that sense, they need to figure out how to play in a man's game and not this this college atmosphere.
Yeah, that's an interesting little crossover comparison going football to basketball there. But I think that Greedy, with being a top pick where he was, you definitely have to prove that talent and make yourself worthy of that pick. And with the right coaching staff in place, it's on you. It's on you at that point. So hopefully the coaching staff is going to get him in a position to where he needs to be. And I think, like I said, confidence is the biggest part, one of the biggest parts of that position. And if you play with some confidence, a little swagger, as you like to say, your play and your ability to play, goes way up. Plus with the removal of that pass interference challenge happening, we should see the pass interference game called a little bit differently this year. I'm looking forward to that piece of it because the corners are, and the defenses as a whole are really strapped as it stands right now as far as their ability to affect games without incurring penalties. So
the play with peeling playing that back with a bit. Playing with a handicap, one hand tied behind the bat sometimes with the way they've been calling penalties the last few seasons, not only last season. But I think his decisiveness too. You mentioned his confidence, that swagger. I think decisiveness and believing in yourself and what you're doing is the right thing to do, and not doubting that those moves, those techniques, or those actions that you're doing, whether it be to jump a pass or to bat one down instead, just to have that confidence that you have the ability to do it and believe in that talent, and taking that and combining that with the hard work too, because talent only takes you so far in professional sports, and we have to see that work combined with it to see that result of it.
So here's my second guy, and he's on my list, but he was on your core piece list. I'm gonna say Baker Mayfield. Now, you got to hear me on this one. I say he's a bubble guy to be a core piece, because even though right now as it stands he's your franchise quarterback, right? you are in a position where the quarterback market's actually pretty heavy out there. There's guys still out there, Cam Newton, Mariota, that are available that could take over and be starting quarterbacks. Even Jameis Winston, if you believe his talent's coachable. And the upcoming quarterback class is pretty heavy as well. And if you don't prove it this year, what are you going to make of Baker Mayfield? You're going to actually ride into a third season? So, yeah, you have 16 games or more you can actually end up playing this season that can prove Baker's ability. But if he has another down season, you have to really assess, am I going to go get a veteran or am I going to go draft another young guy? What's my plan going forward? So, Baker, I can only operate off of the recent tape. I know he has the ability from his rookie season tape, but looking at his last season tape, he's developed bad habits and he's developed some bad things that he's doing out there, and it's way different than his rookie tape. So you're gonna have to almost uncoach some things and then recoach some things. I believe Stefanski can do it, but it's up to Baker to make it happen.
I think we have to eliminate the Freddy Kitchens do. Not completely, because it can't, that mentality, that shift of confidence can really mess up a quarterback and derail his career. So we had to take that in context, but at the same time, I think if we keep the Stefanski and he's semi-functional, semi-competent, and he kind of gets better throughout the season with his coaching staff, I think you have to have two full seasons of Baker Mayfield before you say, okay, this is not our guy. I think it's going to take potentially take a half a season to get out of that, maybe even a full season to get out of what Freddy Kitchens and all the dysfunction created and those bad habits that stuck in him with. And I think once he gets comfortable, once he gets a better line in front of him, once he realizes that Stefanski is trying to cater towards what he does well, what the rest of the offense does well, that I think we'll see some of that the confidence and some of that swagger from Baker Mayfield. And when he has that swagger, we know how confident and deadly he can be when he's locked in.
Here's my last point here on Baker is you can't throw out that season completely. And we've said this before about Stefanski, but he's going to have this offense run in a way where you don't have to beat people through the air to win. And so he's not going to make you make throws to win. He's going to put his running game in a situation where it's going to allow him to be successful. And he's going to be able to make, a medium amount of passes. You're not going to have to throw 30 to 40 passes a game. It's going to be, it's going to be much more to the 15 to 25 passes a game. That's going to be the blueprint. And so Baker's not going to be asked to throw us into victories. That's the big kind of saving grace here of Baker's ongoing development is that Stefanski's system is not going to make him go out there and have to complete 30 throws.
I think it's going to suppress his desire or like that itch to make all of these hero throws. I think that's going to be the dilemma. I think it's a new point that I'm thinking of right now is if he can't settle with Stefanski's system and say, hey, dude, you cannot throw those hero balls and risk turning the ball over twice, three times a game when play through all running backs and make safe throws and make aggressive throws here and there and not all the time like you want to do. And maybe he adjusts to that, but if he doesn't, would that give Stefanski reason to maybe start Keenum ahead of him? Or even if Baker's playing decent, but he's turning the ball over and still not really connecting and on the same page with Stefanski, would he not re-up that deal with him, even though he's being sufficient or competent, Baker Mayfield, and elect for that more game-managing quarterback?
So this is going to be Baker's what now? His fourth coach? He initially had Hugh. Then he had Greg Williams. Yeah. Then he had Freddie, and then now he's going to have Stefanski.
Yeah.
So you have the challenge of meshing with another coach,
into a new system.
Yeah, into a new system. But I think to your point, I think I think Baker's going to start to develop a better feel for the game. And you hear this a lot in sports is, oh, he knows when to pick his spots. He knows when to take those risks. And, you know, you hear that from the best players, regardless of what sports
it is. And commentators, too, if they
were quarterbacks. You're gonna go ahead and pick your spots. Hey, is this the time to make this risky throw? Is this the time to take a little extra risk and go deep here? Or, you know, or try to fit one in there? And that's what he's going to have to develop in terms of Stefanski's system. You know, when can I take those risks, like you're saying? And, you know, what's going to be letting Baker be Baker without tying him to a leash?
So I like that. They have to find an understanding or come to some kind of communication where both on the same page, where Stefanski's not overstepping his bounds and making Baker Mayfield just an average quarterback instead of letting him shine and do what he's unique and really special at. And Baker can't overstep and do that too much and come out of Stefanski's system. So it'll be really interesting to see once sports starts back up here.
Okay, and my last third guy here is I'm not gonna say he's a bubble guy, but I think he's gonna be a guy that's gonna surprise people, and he could very well be a core person here.
Opposite. So he's currently a potentially bubble piece right now, but he could slide into the long term future.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I think it's Mac Wilson.
I'll change my list to mirror yours.
Okay. All right. I'll say Mac Wilson because Mac Wilson. I think the Browns front office. Is holding him in very high regard right now. Look at what we haven't done in free agency. Look, we haven't done via trade. We haven't added any real linebacker depth here. And I know obviously we're going to draft a linebacker, but you're going to go into the season with a very young linebacking core with Taki Taki and Mac Wilson.
And he's your leader.
And Mac Wilson's your leader. They're gonna use Mac Wilson and take that he's learned enough and he have enough on film. From last season with him working with Kurtsey and working with Schobert, that they know he's going to be able to perform adequately or perform at a high level in that position. So I think it's very small right now, but that storyline is going to start building where we're going to have a lot of faith in Mac Wilson, and he's going to become even a more fan favorite than he is right now, and he's going to be a core piece of this defense.
I like that though. I was dreaming up these kind of things in my head as you're saying. I'm hyping myself up right now. I want football season to start right now. But I like that thought quite a bit. I think Mac Wilson might thrive in the leadership role. I think he might be one of those players that's a better leader than he is a follower, and he could very well bring that back from Alabama and bring it over here to Cleveland. And be that leader guy for Taki Taki and whoever we draft, and maybe you get a veteran come in here as a situational guy, as a rotation guy. But I agree that it's a valuable possibility that Matt Wilson is your leader and your starter there in the middle.
Yeah, I'm excited for him. I honestly think that he has all the skill set, all the intangibles to be a very successful linebacker in the middle there. I think he's going to be a very good linebacker for the Browns going forward. So something to watch, something to pay attention to is Mac Wilson. And like I said, the storyline is going to start growing. And, you know, we told you here first that Mac Wilson's the guy to keep an eye on.
Ooh.
Ooh. Predictions.
Moving on to my list. I'm going to start, my first guy is going to be the guy on your Untouchables, or a guy on Untouchables. The partner to the guy who's on your bubble, Denzel Ward. They always say that the best ability is availability. So if we see that the injury starts stacking up and he's one of those guys that just can't seem to catch a break and to get out of that injury, injury bug, yes, that we might have to move on from him and look to replace him and maybe with a top pick the year after this one, or maybe address it via trade before a trade deadline, something like that. And he could very well still be, those guys end up still being, sometimes being solid players and coming back after all the injuries on a different team, but that's typically how it happens. They don't really make that label and really get consistent and sustain the health until they move on somewhere else. And okay. Sometimes that ends up happening, so that's my number one guy. He has all the talent. I think he will really benefit for the NFL not picking up that that
Carl Joseph?
No, I'm saying the NFL letting the new rule kind of fade in the background.
With the pass interference.
Pass interference with the challenge.
Yeah, you play a little more freely with that.
So I think he does really well with his hands. I think he's very physical. So I think they'll definitely cater to him if he stays healthy. He's a very good cornerback. Number two, I want to say... I'm not sure, honestly. I want to say... Are we doing only players that are currently on a contract?
Yeah. Okay. What are you paying? Like, you gonna go old school? I think Birdie's on the bubble. I don't know if he's gonna make the roster.
No,
it's a real question mark for me. Honestly, I can see him making it if something goes down with Baker and then Case Keenum also goes down. He's a bubble guy for me, really. I don't know if he's gonna quite make the cut when it comes to his training camp.
No. I was thinking Rashad Higgins.
Okay, but he's not on the roster.
Okay, that's assuming he is. But I'm gonna say Chris Hubbard. He had a very rocky season when he got implemented.
Oh, he's gone, bro. No, he's still on the roster.
He's still on the roster.
He's gone, man. He ain't gonna keep.
Currently he's not a core piece. He's a white tackle, right? Currently he's a starter. So saying that we don't address it in the draft, he's your starter day one. Okay.
No. Get Conklin, bro.
He's a guard.
He's
a guard, boy.
I'm sorry, he's gonna be next to Conklin. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a guard. Let it be known that Mike does not know what position our new signees play. What position does Carl Joseph play, Mike?
He's a safety.
Okay.
I'm aware.
Okay.
Austin Hooper's tight end. Let's move on.
Okay. So, I think he's going to be on the bubble. Because if we don't address that position, that right tackle, during the draft, then we're going to, our free agency afterwards, we're going to force him to play that, come back to that position. And I think he's had very lucky times when he's starting at that spot. And I don't think he's been a very solid or consistent piece. And I think if we can't address it in the draft, or if we don't, then we'll definitely look for a piece before the trade deadline with him. So I think that's my number two bubble guy. And then I'm going to mix up like you did. Instead of a third bubble guy, I'm going to do bubble currently transitioning to maybe a core piece. I'm gonna go with Kareem Hunt. We have him on the tender, so we can match any offers mm-hmm. from other teams. So assuming we resign him, he's a guy that I fully expect to become untouchable with a two tandem back into the fancy system as moving forward. I think he pairs perfectly with Nick Chubb, and using both a two system back on many plays where you have maybe a double tight end or one tight end, you have Jarvis and Odell out there, I think that's going to be an extremely deadly formation to put out there mm-hmm. if used correctly. If Stefanski and Baker can connect and become a viable mesh and become a viable offense.
Okay, I think Kareem Hunt could be a piece with the Browns this season, obviously, and then I think maybe the season after, if you franchise tag him or if we sign him for a smaller contract, I think he's really good backup assurance for Nick Chubb, which is great. And I don't see him being a core piece like over the next 5 years, but I see him being a piece in the next 2 years.
Well, core piece 5 years? Or are we talking about like a playoff run kind of core piece?
I'm talking about like the next three.
Well, yeah, 2 to 3 years. We're talking about your playoff window.
Yeah, I'm talking about
about
3 to 5 years.
That's how I pictured it a little bit.
My
but Matt Wilson my is take also. Here... Oh, if we're doing more 3 to 5 years, I'd say Larry Ogunjobi. If not, then Matt Wilson. I think Larry has only improved every year, and the more he's gotten a chance, and I think he's a very underrated, disrupting quarterback from that nose tackle position.
Okay, I'm gonna say I like your idea with Hubbard, but I wanna make this known that like okay,
you need a functional offensive line.
Okay, here, but listen, we talked about this about a week or so ago. About how you're gonna have to start saying goodbye to your fan favorites, right?
He's not a fan favorite,
right? That's fine, but on the same
for various reasons.
On the same side of things, we have to understand that even though you have a stacked roster and you have a lot of talent across the roster, you're always on any roster, regardless of you know how many Super Bowls or whatever that roster won, they're always going to have some weak points in the roster. And the front office's job is to figure out what weak points they're okay with and they can live with, trying to patch things up and be good enough. So if it's that right tackle position, maybe. Is it going to be an outside linebacker? Maybe. You don't quite know at this point. Is it going to be having a better corner? Maybe. So, that's kind of my thoughts on that. So, being where we're at here with our discussion, do you have any more points on the core pieces?
No, I think I agree with you that this year it will be a very tone setting year for players. It's a major break season in a new system, and the front office and Stefanski would get an idea moving forward of what his core pieces are and what he has to move on for better opportunities, whether free agency or draft. And we talked about fit and talent, and if there's another better player coming out or in the free agency available that's interested or to fit really well in Cleveland, then you have to maybe shed a current guy who's underperforming or he's having a little trouble for a guy who makes your team better immediate and long term.
Well, that's going to wrap up this episode. Definitely appreciate everyone who's continuing to listen to and support the podcast. We really enjoy these discussions that we're having. You know, the ones that fans want to talk about, the things that are on all our minds, and maybe the radio is not talking about, or maybe they're having a discussion that's not really into the topic you want to get into. So we definitely want to keep having those discussions. And please, send us the DMs, give us the comments. We want to hear about the things you guys want to talk about, so we're going to continue to have those talks.
Or just leave us a review. You can get through with your questions or your discussion points that way too. We'll check it all. Just let us know what you want to listen to, what you like, what you don't like. We're here for it.
We're very open to feedback. I think that in something like a podcast or even just our social media accounts, we don't always get enough feedback from people because, we're putting stuff out there that's, generally, the fun things of Cleveland, but we'd love to hear some feedback just so we can help give you a better experience to the podcast and to the stuff we're putting out there. So definitely appreciate those who are giving feedback, and we encourage those people to give us some more feedback.
And That about wraps it up. But next week here, we're gonna be getting into the mock draft a little bit and towards the Browns draft, heading towards the end of April. We're gonna be having a little bit of Cleveland episode on Friday, so make sure you come back for that. And as always,
in Cleveland, everything is earned.
Thanks, guys. Doom, boom, 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 doom, boom, doom, boom, boom, boom.